What are those emotions and habits that remain unseen to gay men and the rest of the world?
Well, the book talks about a series of seven of them. The first is that we have built the culture with the least amount of public violence among any culture of men in this country, which is a remarkable accomplishment. In gay worlds, there basically is no public violence. It's vanishingly small as a phenomenon. We also have huge levels of volunteerism and service, and a lot of documented studies show that our levels of volunteerism and service are far, far above other men, and we actually do a whole kind of different kind of volunteerism. We actually do caretaking volunteering, which is very different. What I think is really going on here is a set of radical ethical innovations that gay men have been trying out for the last 25 years, and that at the core of many of them lies really an ethic of care. Care in nonviolence, care in volunteerism and service, care in sexual caretaking, care for women, care for each other. And that's not usually a part of our gay narrative. It's not usually part of the story we tell ourselves. So the truth is that really a lot of the story we've told ourselves is woefully incomplete and highly inaccurate, that if you really look at the aggregate of what gay men are doing in these self-created worlds, you see traditions and habits and social patterns that look more like constituted spiritual communities than they look like anything else.
There is a part of the book that talks a little bit about that, and I'm wondering if you'll read it for us.
I'd love to. For too long, we've lied about our best selves. We've colluded in a series of discussions which tell half-truths. Some are self-inflicted, others sanctioned by the dominant culture, still others frankly concocted by those who would see us die. By rote, we rag on about too many drugs, moan over meaningless sex, complain over too many muscles and too much competition, censure the circuit, decry shallowness, bitch over body obsession, posit that the gay world makes, quote, no place for my size or ethnicity or color or age or style or weight. We say gay men are dogs, and we replay the came out, got disappointed, got depressed, got infected, got bitter litany. No wonder we're depressed. It's a wonder we haven't all slit our wrists long ago. And we've had enormous help in constructing this narrative. For years, it has seemed that the most common tale we've told, that most easily published, promoted, and promulgated, is a relentless, dour criticism. It has its approved canon of permissible topics and stands. Muscles, bad. Too much sex, bad. Too little sex, bad. Circuit and substances, bad and worse. Barebacking, really bad. Dating disappointments, sad. Sex addiction, internet addiction, cigarette addiction. Tawdry public sex, communal shortcomings, exclusion, and oh, did I mention body fascism? All in all, it's a litany of familiar dismals, each with its kernel of truth. Most derive from our fondest hopes betrayed. Yet together they provide a received narrative that is as factually incomplete as it is grossly misleading. More important, when they become the only story that we know to tell ourselves about ourselves, they become our reality.
In a lot of ways, a lot of the habits that we are accustomed to, whether we realize them or not, whether others do, are often habits that we're made to feel shameful about. And what I got from the book is that what you're trying to say is we really need to look at ourselves and feel good.
Well, we need to look at ourselves and see our picture accurately. It's really not a book that is intended as a rah-rah booster book. It's not a feel-good book. It is a book to tell truths and to say, look at all the parts of our story, because only by understanding ourselves fully and the full parts of our narrative can we hope to begin to make mindful choices about which parts of ourselves we inhabit. But what's interesting at the moment is that we're omitting, obliterating our very best values even as we enact them. We're pretending we are something other than we are. And I don't think that serves us well, and I don't think it helps keep our hearts alive with each other.
Once gay men begin to acknowledge these subcultures that you talk about in the book, what kind of transformation then begins to take place for gay men and their lives?
That's the point of this. You've gone to the heart of why this is important work. Because we can't begin to redress the ways that we feel we don't meet each other's hearts until we know our whole story. And I believe there are failings in the ways we've constituted community habits and practices, conventions, language, rituals, institutions, and that we have gotten kind of stuck in a in a paradox where we, on the one hand, show all of these magnificently loving values, these magnificently ethical and high spiritual values, and on the other hand, enact with each other a set of exclusive values and exclusive practices and things that hurt us and make us guard our hearts with each other. And that's a tragedy. And if we hope to pull ourselves out of that spiral, we have first to understand the ways we actually live and what the values in those are. If we're to be able to create some cultural space for opening up a new and more radiant and sustaining set of values with how we are with each other.
I want to ask you about the preparation process for this book. You were the president of New York's Lesbian and Gay Community Service Center. You worked at the Gay Men's Health Crisis. The book is also peppered with anecdotes from people that you've known along the way, giving examples of what you talk about in the book. Tell me what kind of effort went into writing the book, how long it took.
Well, the book is really part of a larger movement called Manifest Love. And what that attempts to do, we have groups of men who meet around the country in chapters. I lead weekends and teach about this stuff, this ethical analysis. And so a lot of the stories in the book actually come from the men who've been in those groups, people's stories that I've heard. And the book itself took about a little over a year to write. But the thinking in this and the gathering evidence and data has been going on for about 3 years. And I had this set of ideas and wanted to test them by going out in the world and sort of running pilot groups and talking to men and seeing if this made sense. And the response was not only that it seemed to describe some of the core quandaries of our lives and the ways that we feel we fall short with each other and our hopes for each other, but also that people hadn't really had a language for talking about it. So the book attempts to provide, between its covers, a way of beginning this set of discussions. But the ultimate goal is to transform our common culture with each other and to point some ways to a vision that is more humane with each other. We have a chance to create something that is a radiantly loving space for us to inhabit together. And it takes very concrete forms. This is not woo-woo language. This is really true. This has to do with how we interact with each other. And if we become more mindful around that, we can create something that is really breathtaking for us to have the experience of what it is to have a community of men who manifest love with each other.
David Nimmons, thank you.
My pleasure.
David Nimmons is the author of The Soul Beneath the Skin, The Unseen Hearts and Habits of Gay Men, and it's published by St. Martin's Press. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goebel in San Francisco.